The passage that Jake just read to us in 2 Samuel chapter 11 is the introduction to the fairly lengthy and pretty sad story of David and Bathsheba and the consequences that followed. You will recall, as the story continues, that David, realizing that he now is in trouble having caused this conception, and with her husband being out of town, this sin that he has committed is going to be found out. And so he calls for Uriah to take a vacation from the war, calls him back. But Uriah does not go home to his wife. And it's well known that he didn't go home because there are lots of witnesses who saw him refuse to go home. And so instead, when that happens, David sends message back to Joab, the commander of the army, to put Uriah up on the front line and then withdraw the other soldiers away from him and make sure he gets killed in the next battle, which is exactly what happens. And then as soon as the last amen is said at the funeral of Uriah, David and Bathsheba get married, and a few months later, she gives birth to a full-term baby. This is the sad story of David and Bathsheba, but I want to focus not so much on all of the consequences that followed. I want to focus on the temptation that led to it, and the scenario where David is up on the rooftop. And I want you to understand that scenario, the rooftop scenario with David, is something that happens to all of us. And even more so because of something that's in our lives, and not on our rooftops, but it's in our homes, and it's in our bedrooms, it's in our libraries, it's in our schools, and it's something we need to be aware of and to think about. That picture right there was taken by a well-known gospel preacher named Farrell Jenkins, and it gives you an actual visual picture based on archaeological discoveries. I don't know if you can see it very clearly, but that's about where David would have been, at the top of that thing there, where those balconies are. Those railings are. That's about where David would have been when he was on his rooftop looking down. And you can see that it's up on an elevated area there. And he can look down and see people down in the areas down below. That's about where he would have been when this story takes place, when it starts out. I just thought that was an interesting picture. I thought that would give shed some light on what's going on. I want to talk about the temptation. I want to talk about David on the rooftop. But before I get to that, I want to talk about tools, trends, and technology. What do all those things up there in the upper right have in common? A handgun, an automobile, a knife, a fire, and a dollar bill. Well, what they all have in common, of course, is that they're all tools. And as tools, they are neither moral nor immoral. They're simply amoral. They're simply things that we can use, that we can use in the right way or we can use in the wrong way. You can use a gun to defend yourself, to protect your family. You can use it to hunt for meat, to feed your family. Or you can use it to hold up a liquor store or kill somebody you're mad at. Depends on how you use it. You can use a car to drive to work or to run over somebody. Depends on how you use it. You can use a knife to carve meat, or you can stab somebody with it. Depends on how you use it. Same is true with fire and money and everything else. All the other tools that we have in this life, it depends on how we use them. Anytime new technology comes out, there's always a panic about it. Always. Here are some examples. Jazz music. I love this quote. Ladies Home Journal said this in 1921. Jazz is worse than the saloon. It's worse. Why? You might wonder. I asked. Because it affects our young people especially, said Mr. Bott. I don't know who Mr. Bott was. It is degrading. It lowers all the moral standards. Unlike liquor, a great deal of its harm is direct and immediate. Okay, so parents, if your teenager comes home with a bottle of liquor and a jazz album, take that jazz album away from them. They can keep the liquor, that's not a problem. But that jazz album, the minute they turn that on, the effects are direct and immediate. That's going to kill them. No problem with the liquor, though, that's fine. How about the radio? Radio, when that first came out, man, that was a brand new technology, right? But others thought that radio would have an evil influence because it would bring the theater into the home. We can't have that. Some people feared. One quote I read, I should have put it in here. A lot of people in the 1920s, when radio first became a thing in the 1920s, people getting radios, a lot of preachers said, wait a minute, people are going to stay home from church and listen to church on the radio and they won't come in. And I thought, wait a minute. yeah, that sounds vaguely familiar. Automobiles. It turns out that jazz is not the cause of moral decline. It turns out the automobile is the cause. Ohio State University says some social critics and religious leaders in the 1920s decried the decline of morality as a result of the automobile. So maybe it's not the jazz, maybe it's the car that's caused the sad state of our society. Well, the fact is, every new thing that comes out is always going to be the next big thing that causes the decline of society. And what we fail to recognize, I think, is that human sin is the cause of decline in society. And it doesn't matter what the tool is that brings it about. If you intend to be a sinner, whether you listen to jazz music or not, you're going to be a sinner. And the jazz music isn't going to turn you into a sinner if that's not what you want to be. Since the earliest 20th century, psychologists have been concerned about with how technology affects health and well-being. In the 1930s, they weighed the effects of listening to the radio. In the 1960s, they turned their attention to television. Remember the 1980s when early 1980s when video games came out? That was why the crime rate went up and all these murders were happening. You know what happened to the crime rate after 1993? It plummeted. As video games exploded, the crime rate dropped dramatically. So maybe video games prevent crime. I don't know. But I remember that social panic. But anyway. More recent years, they expanded the research of video games and cell phone use. Right? Psychologists have always been vocal on questions about the long-term effects of entertainment technology. Folks, they're all tools. It's how we use them that determines whether they're good or bad. And that leads me, I hope you can guess where I'm headed with this. The next big thing, of course, is the internet. The internet is the next big thing. And I'm here to tell you this morning, it's a tool. And it can be used for good or ill. And what I want to talk about this morning is a very practical lesson. That is, let's make sure we use it for good and not let it become a tool for ill. Let's make sure we use it properly. And I will tell you, my life, not everything in my life, but a large percentage of my life depends on the functioning of the internet. My job cannot be done without an internet connection. That's how I make a living to support my family. Okay, so to me, the internet is a vital tool of modern society, a vital tool for my life. Okay. My point with my analogy with David on the rooftop is this. The internet is like with David on the rooftop, he's up there. Nothing wrong with the rooftop. Okay, the rooftop was a common place where people in ancient times would go up there to get a cool breeze, to get away from the hubbub and the noise of the crowds down on the streets, and to go up there and just relax, meditate. You can read Peter went up on the rooftop in the book of Acts when that's when he sees the great sheet with the meats on it and everything. It's a good place to go to get away from the stress and the noise and the heat. Go up there and relax a little bit. And while you're up there, you can look around and see what's going on in town. Nothing wrong with that at all. It's a comfortable, relaxing thing to do that people frequently did in ancient times. Well, while David is up on the rooftop, something happens that he wasn't expecting. He's just looking around, minding his own business, didn't go up there looking for trouble. I don't think when David climbed the stairs, went up there, said, I'm going to go out there and scope out all the hot women in Jerusalem and look around. He didn't have a telescope or anything. How far could he see? That wasn't his goal of going up there. It was just get some relief from the heat of the day or in the evening when it was cool, whatever it was. But once he's up there, the view of that woman that's nearby, down below, he sees that. And it comes into his eyes and into his home. My point is, that's what the internet does. It brings things into our home such that you and I are on the rooftop all the time. And there's always stuff coming into our home that didn't used to be available, but now it's here all the time. We have access to it all the time. We are always, David, on the rooftop, seeing something that may be tempting us, that may be enticing us. It's always there. And the flood of stuff that comes in, some of it's good, some of it's bad. That's just a little cartoon that I put together there. But, okay, what comes in on the internet? Gossip, jobs, racism, porn, news, games, shopping, Bible study, scams, and everything else comes in. It's a giant pipeline that brings in everything from the outside world right into the comfort of your home and the privacy of your home where nobody else knows that you're doing it. It's an avenue of temptation. It's also a wonderful tool for many good things. But it's a tool, and the question is, how do we use it? We'll talk about a few things that we need to be careful of with this tool. Internet porn. I hope nobody's involved in that, but we haven't talked about it. Something we just haven't talked about in this church. We need to talk about it. Stay away from it. It's a temptation, and folks sometimes, again, like David on the rooftop, internet porn can come to us when we're not even looking for it. It can pop up suddenly on a window or a screen. You may get, and I know I've seen, I know David, you've seen a pop-up that says something like life is short, have an affair, click here, you know, to meet hot women or whatever. Or you may see the picture that comes up that says, check out these women in cool bikinis, and just click right here. And those of us guys, we have to stop and say, whoa, wait a minute, don't be clicking that. Don't be clicking that. All right, don't go there. And women, maybe you have your share of temptations on that stuff too. I don't know. Look at these numbers. It says here down in the lower right, about 200,000 Americans are classified as porn addicts. 40 million American people regularly visit porn sites. 35% of all internet downloads are related to pornography. I didn't know that. 34% of internet users have experienced unwanted exposure. That's when you're minding your own business like King David and something pops in on your screen and says, hey, look at me. And you weren't looking for it, you weren't expecting it, but it shows up and it calls your name. What are you going to do with that? Here's the problem with all this, all right, aside from the fact that 1 Peter 4:3 says don't do it, all right? We spent enough of our past lifetime doing the will of the Gentiles. We walked in lewdness, lust, drunkenness, revelries, and so on. Lewdness and lust, that's the passage that says don't look at internet porn. Okay, if you're looking for a Bible passage, that's it. Here's the problem with that. Something that appears to be doesn't seem to be too bad. I'll just click on it. Easy stuff can lead to hard stuff. And hard stuff can lead to more hard stuff. And all of that is wrong in itself, but it can get worse and take you down paths you don't want to go. To places you never thought you'd be. It's more accessible than in the past. In the past, pre-internet days, if you wanted porn, you had to go looking for it. You had to go to the bad side of town, to some shop that sold it. Or you had to go to some news rack that had the stuff, remember the stuff with the brown wrapping around the magazines that they had to put on there? So kids wouldn't see it. Guess what? Kids can see it now. Any kid can see it now. If you have a finger that can click a button, you can access porn. That's how easy it is. Okay? And addiction is very common. Once you start down that road, it's very hard to turn back. Because it's just like a drug. What thrills you yesterday won't thrill you tomorrow. What thrills you tomorrow won't thrill you a week from now. And you've been looking for harder and harder stuff, and you get addicted to it. People spend more and more time with it. It becomes their life. All right? Don't go down that road. Stay away from that stuff. Let's be careful. And let's be careful with our families, too. Let's make sure that our kids don't get mixed up in it. Let's watch what they're doing. And let's make sure that we just don't let this happen. Inappropriate relationships. Matthew 5:28, Jesus said, but I say to you that whoever looks at a woman to lust after her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. Ephesians 5:25, husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her. And Titus 2:4 tells older women that they should admonish the young women to love their husbands. Husbands and wives are supposed to be dedicated to loving each other like they love no one else. In an exclusive relationship. Internet's a wonderful thing for making connections and communicating with people. It's a wonderful tool. Just a few months ago, Bridget was able to meet up with a half-sister that she knew existed, but she'd never met, who's about 4 or 5 years older than she is. Hadn't met her whole life. And now she has this new family member that she was never able to meet up with. Wonderful tool for that. And we're able to do a lot of things with meeting people and communicating and building relationships with the internet that are wonderful. And I'm all in favor of that. But what happens when, either through anonymous, maybe through games, we just have text messages in games or chat things on Facebook or chatting with somebody through emails, whatever it may be, what happens when those innocent chats begin to move into another area? What happens when we begin talking about intimate details of our life with somebody who's not our spouse? We begin talking to somebody and saying, you know, my spouse just doesn't understand me. Let me tell you about my problems. And that person is not our spouse. And yet that person seems to like me and understand me better than my spouse does. Now where are we headed? We're headed for trouble in our marriage. That's where we're headed. Because before you know it, we've now developed a romantic attachment. Even if it's not physical, even if we've never hooked up with them physically, we're now moving in a direction violates a whole bunch of these passages right here. We're now developing and building a relationship, somebody, and abandoning our spouse, at least emotionally, if not physically. Whether it ever leads to that physical relationship or not, we're somewhere we shouldn't be. And it's all because that internet brought that relationship, brought that opportunity into our homes, and we took the bait. It's much more accessible than in the past. In the past, you really had to work hard, or at least harder, to build an emotional connection with somebody. Now there's millions of people around the world that'll talk to you if you click on something, right? You can find them. At least it used to be a little harder in the past. I think every generation believes that there was a golden age when none of these problems existed, right? You know, back in the 1950s, there was no such thing as sexual immorality, right? Hippies invented it in the 60s, right? That's when it was. Well, no. You know, read 2 Samuel 11. King David was doing it 3,000 years ago. We all think there's a golden age. But my point is, technology changes where it happens or accelerates it or brings it right into our homes where we weren't looking for it. And so we need to understand the challenge. We need to be aware of where the temptations are so that we can combat them more effectively. Realize that these messages and these texts and these relationships that develop on the internet can be a great thing. You can make friends. You can meet up with people. That's wonderful. But it also comes with a temptation. If you're married, you be careful about who you talk to and how you talk to them, because it can be a terrible distraction for our marriages, and it can lead to a breakup in our marriage. Unfaithfulness in the heart, whether it ever leads to unfaithfulness in person, it's a bad thing. How about time and money? Who spends too much time on the internet? Me. Who spends too much money on the internet? You don't have to raise your hand. You can decide yourself. But here's the thing. Like anything, like any good tool, there's nothing wrong with shopping. I buy stuff on Amazon. That's not a sin to buy things on Amazon. That's not what I'm saying. It is a sin to spend too much money on Amazon, just as it is to spend too much money at Walmart or too much money at Target or too much money at Belk or wherever it is you're spending too much money, because that's covetousness. And it doesn't matter where you're doing it, it's wrong. But the difference is the internet makes it easier to do it, because now you can do it 24 hours a day with one click of the finger. I want this, click, oh, I want that, click, I want that, click. You used to have to get in your car and drive across town to the mall and physically pick up all that stuff. And when it wouldn't fit in the cart, you realize you had too much. So you put some of it back, or you couldn't afford, that's too much money, I'll put it back. You don't get that, those checks and balances don't exist anymore. Because the credit card just keeps, and you don't see how much it cost. Click, 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 okay, I'm getting all that. And the mailman delivers it right to your door. And then the bill comes later, uh-oh, what have I done? What have I done? And then what happens? Well, maybe our responsibilities, maybe our financial obligations. Maybe we can't pay the rent because I spent all the money on Amazon. Maybe I can't pay the rent because I spent all the money on whatever it was that I spent it on the internet. So we can become addicted to shopping, and we spend more than we intended to, and it harms us financially. What about games? Nothing wrong with playing games on the internet. I play them sometimes. David and I play it, and Jackson play a tank battle game, blow things up. Oh, it's really cool. All right, that's fun. All right, what if I do that instead of working for a living? Well, yeah, I'd like to, but I can't. I got to work for a living. All right? If we start doing that and neglect our bills and our obligations or our family or our church or our God or whatever it is that we're neglecting because we're too busy sitting there with our eyes wide open bugging on the internet, okay, we've now it's turned into an addiction. Now it's turned into a problem. But it's so easy because it's right there in our homes. We can just click on it. And that vast arrays of entertainment are available that never used to be. Used to be like that old Bruce Springsteen song. You had a TV of 57 channels and there's nothing on, right? That's what you used to have. Now you got an internet with a million and a billion channels. And there's always something going on that you can click on. All right? So we can be addicted to it. And it then gets in the way of what our lives should be. Luke 16 and verse 10, Jesus said, "He who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much. He was unjust in what is least is unjust also in much. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches?" You and I are expected to use time and money wisely. Why? Because you didn't invent it. God gave it to you. The time and money you have on this earth wasn't something you came up with. So you're responsible for how you use it. If you waste it all on video games or on online shopping, and don't deal with the obligations and things you're supposed to be doing, you just misuse the gifts of God that He gave you. So be careful how you use your time and money. Don't let the internet steal it away from you or make you addicted to things that are distracting. James 4, verse 1, where do wars and fights come from among you? Do they not come from your desire for pleasures at war in your members? You lust and do not have. You murder and covet and cannot obtain. You fight in war, yet you do not have because you do not ask. You ask and do not receive because you ask amiss that you may spend it on your pleasures. If you spend all your money online and now you can't pay the rent and you pray to God, God, give me some money to pay the rent. He's going to say, I already did. That prayer's not going to be answered. You spend it amiss on your pleasures. And that's true for anything. That could be true for a trip to Disneyland. If you've paid for a trip to Disneyland and you can't pay the rent, well, Disneyland's not at fault. It's not a sin to go to Disneyland. But it is if you can't pay the rent. All right? And that's on you. Disneyland's a fine thing, wonderful thing to take a kid to, but only if you can afford it, not at the cost of things that you need to do. If you spend it amiss on your pleasures, don't expect God to answer your prayers when you need the money for something else. How about this one? Let's be careful about this. Gossip, rumor, hatred, and sins of the tongue, or sins of the keyboard. The keyboard has replaced the tongue, I think, in many cases. It hasn't replaced, let's say this, it has supplemented the tongue. The tongue is still a fire that no one can tame, as James would say in James 3. But on top of the tongue, we now have the keyboard doing the work of the tongue, spreading some of the same problems that the tongue used to do all by itself. Now it has an evil helper called the keyboard. Keyboards are not sinful. There's one right there. I use it every day. All right. But what comes out of the keyboard? Tongues are not sinful. What comes out of the tongue could be good or bad. Got to be careful. Just like with the tongue, we got to watch the keyboard. What if we're forwarding and repeating things that we don't know are true? Let me ask you this. Do you just say and repeat everything if you don't know it's true or not about somebody else? You better not. The Bible says that's gossip. You got to stop doing it. But people do that on the keyboard all the time. Oh, I heard some hot thing. It agrees with my political views. I'm just going to forward it. Really? Really? What if it's full of false information about other people? What if it's full of lies or stuff you don't know whether it's true or not? You just forward it? Really? Would you do that with your voice? I hope not. But why would you do that with a keyboard? Harmful and hateful statements we would never verbalize. Sometimes people type things or say things in emails or say things to other people in writing, whether it's on whatever platform you want to put it on. They'll say things they would never say to somebody in person because they don't have to face that person face to face and hear their reaction or see their face. It's much easier to just type all that anger and that hatred and send it off. And boom, I showed them. No, you didn't. You made a fool of yourself. You may have made a sinner of yourself too. We've got not to do that. Angry words. We come out, we sing the song, angry words, let them never from the tongue and bridled slip. How about when they slip from the keyboard? We send them out. We say angry things to people that we wish we could take back. You know what? You can't take it back. Not from the tongue and not from the keyboard. And stuff on the internet lasts even longer than the tongue. It's on the internet. It's there forever, as many people are finding out these days. Racism. Hatred, radical ideologies. People get caught up in all the various conspiracy theories and whatever political viewpoints they have, and that becomes their life. They get addicted to those kind of things, and then that's all they worry about. They don't have time for whatever it is they should be doing because this stuff is taking over their lives. It's way too easy to just type something and hit enter, but you can't take it back. So let's be careful with that. James 3 and verse 8, no man can tame the tongue. Is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth, and a lot of times out of the same keyboard, produce blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. You and I ought not to be putting stuff like that out there. So let's be careful how we use it. How about get-rich-quick schemes? How many of those are there on the internet? Millions? How many of them should be signing up for? None. There's no such thing as get rich quick. All right. Get rich quick schemes are always a bad idea, whether they're on the internet or not. If you're looking for the next big thing that's going to get you rich overnight, forget it. Just don't go there. It's not going to happen. All right? Why is it a bad idea? Well, Proverbs 28, verse 20 says, a faithful man will abound with blessings, but he who hastens to be rich will not go unpunished. If you think that it's a good idea to try to get rich quick, you're wrong. Stop. Change your direction in life. You're on the wrong path. Paul writes in 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 9, that those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and in many foolish and harmful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. I can't say it any better than that. Computers, the problem with computers, computer technology is really the astrology of our generation. You know, back in the day, right, like in the Old Testament, when the king of Babylon whenever he had a problem or something going on, what would he do? He would call for the wise men, right? Who are the wise men? The astrologers, the guys with the big hats and the numbers and the charts and the stars and everything. And they would come in and tell him what to do. Because look, we got the star chart here, and it says on this date, you know, whatever, and this star, and then there's Jupiter and Mars. And oh, there you go, right there. There's the decision. The king would say, okay, I pay these guys a lot of money. It must be the right answer. Whatever comes out of the chart, that's it, right? They're smart guys. Computers have that same aura of infallibility. If it comes out of a computer, well, I mean, computers are high-tech. If something comes out of a computer, it must be true. And so when something comes across on the internet or in an email, you know, Bill Gates is going to give you $1 billion if you get the, you know, if you refuse this so-and-so vaccine, or if you go to this, you know, location, do 10 jumping jacks, Bill Gates is going to give you $1 million. No, he's not. All right. But people think that because it came in on a computer. I mean, it's right there on the computer. How can it be wrong? All kinds of junk comes through. It has false credibility. And it plays on people's greed and covetousness. That's what all get-rich-quick schemes do. They play on our greed and covetousness. People want some quick shortcut to getting rich, and it doesn't exist. But the computer promised it to them, so they think it's real. Just delete all that junk and don't get mixed up with it. The last one, I think it's the last one, scams. How many scams are there out there? Well, far too many. Computer technology is confusing to many. You can see all the problems we have with it here sometimes. You've seen me and David fight with it and yell at it and beat on it. For the average person who is not in the IT field, it's even harder. And I understand that. Some of you have given up on it all. Don't have a computer at home. So this lesson may not mean a whole lot to you, but maybe you can help counsel others that are involved in this stuff if that's your case. But computer technology is confusing to many. And so when they get a phone call that says, Microsoft has discovered a problem, you need to send us $500, we'll fix it for you. They think, oh no, I'm blowing up the internet. I got to send them $500 right now or else we're all going to die. No, you're not going to die. Nothing will happen. Just ignore stuff like that. There are a lot of lonely heart scams that come in where people get emails from somebody offering them romance from somebody in some country. Just send them some money. And they need money, and then they'll be your boyfriend or girlfriend or whatever. What we need to do when we see things that we're not sure about or not clear about, something like that, if that's happening to you or you get some message like that, just stop and pause and don't panic. My mom has gotten several calls, multiple calls, telling her that my daughter's husband, Charlie, needs $3,000 for bail money. She needs to go get gift cards and send to him right now. And she's got like three times he's been arrested in the last 2 years. It's like, no, he hasn't. He's not been arrested. Mama's smart enough to know not to fall for that. But, you know, many elderly people are not. And they get these calls and they, oh, no, I got to send him $3,000 right now or he's going to be in jail. No, just wait. Just calm down. Don't panic. These things are not real. And the thing is, when you encounter something like this, you get some kind of a panic message or an email or a call or phone call that seems to be some kind of urgent thing, stop and get some advice. Don't just react quickly. If it were really a crisis, they would not be sending you an email. They would not be phone calling you. If you were really about to be arrested by the IRS, the agents would be at your door with guns. They would not be phone calling you, telling you to send them gift cards. Okay? So don't go with that. Talk to somebody. Get some wisdom. All right? Proverbs 12:15 says, the way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he who heeds counsel is wise. Talk to somebody who has some computer experience. Okay? Talk to me. Talk to David. Talk to Jeff. Talk to somebody who has some experience with computers. If you think something's coming in that looks like a crisis, talk to somebody about it. Don't just start sending money or going into a panic. If somebody is calling you, it's a scam. Right? That's how you can tell if it's a scam. If they call you, it's a scam. Right? That's easy to figure out, right? Boom, problem solved. Okay. The point is, we're accountable for what we do with our money and our time. And if you waste money on scams, that's a dollar you didn't have to help the poor, help the church, pay your bills, all the things that we should be doing with our money. So let's not lose it to these kind of things. All right. What's my point in all this? I did have one more. Another possible abuse of the internet is church services. Now, I must say, church services are intended, that we put on the internet right now, and those out there, hi there, glad you're here. They're intended to help shut-ins, sick, isolated saints, and that's a good thing. That's a good use of the internet. To help people who would otherwise not have any contact, not be able to participate, not be able to hear what we're talking about, not be able to commune with the Lord. That's what we intended for. But can it be abused? Sure. It's not a substitute for able-bodied folks to lay home and just not show up. That's not what it's for. It's intended to give some help to isolated, the sick, those who are contagious. That's what it's for. It's not intended to be a substitute for actually being here to worship. I know what Mike and I have talked about is if you're sick, stay home. Let's love your neighbors yourself. You don't want to come and infect people. If you're sick, stay home. If you're afraid of getting sick, come on in anyway. Here's why. Because in the first and second century Roman Empire, you know what happened to people who got caught worshiping Jesus? They got beheaded. Okay? But you know what they did? They came in anyway. All right? They may have been afraid of getting beheaded, but they came on in to worship anyway. All right? They took the chance. All right? So if you're afraid of something happening, come on in anyway. If you're sick and you don't want to infect people, please stay home. All right? That's what it's for. That's the purpose of our internet connection. Used properly, but it can be misused. Let's not misuse it. Hebrews 10:24 teaches that we need to assemble together, partly because it's about encouraging one another. And we can encourage you if you're at home, but you can't encourage us because you can't talk to us. So we want you online if you need to be, that's fine. Use it properly, but not as a substitute for the able-bodied to come in and participate. All right. Internet, this is my last slide. Many, many good uses. Lots of good things we can do with the internet. There's a small sampling. There's millions of others, I'm sure. But let's be careful that it doesn't become a tool that we use for ill. That becomes harmful to our souls, harmful to our families, harmful to our lives, and we get addicted to things that we can't get out of, or that we waste money on things that we shouldn't be spending money on. Let's use it as a tool. It's a wonderful tool. It's a wonderful invention. I'm glad it was invented. And it's accomplished so much good for our society, enabled so many things we didn't used to be able to do. But like all tools, it can be misused. Let's make sure that we're using it properly. Would you spend a moment in prayer with me, please? Holy Father, we bow down before you, thanking you for the tools and the technology that you've allowed our society to have. Asking you to help us to use them in a proper way, a way that would bring glory to you and not shame to ourselves. Asking you to help us to resist the temptations that are brought into our home by this tool. Asking you to help us to overcome or to repent of them if we've been caught up in them in the past. Help us to put them away. Help us to treat one another as we should. Help us to maintain our good marriages like we should. Help us to assemble and worship with you as we should. Father, help us to always be aware of the challenges of our society, as every society must be. There are challenges unique to our generation. We ask you to help us to learn them and overcome them. And there's times when we fail, Father, as we fail with many things. We ask your help and your forgiveness when we fail. Help us to do better. Take care of us and bless us, Father, in Jesus' name. Amen. Mm-hmm.